Welcome back to the Last Lap podcast. Thank you all for joining us in this mid-season break. We're in the weeds at the minute, Niren.
We are, yeah, firmly.
We're in the weeds.
Yeah, there's little bits going on. There's murmurings and stuff.
We're clutching at those straws.
No, you know what we need? We need some silly season shenanigans.
We do. Because remember last year we had, obviously, Vettel retire, which then the knock-on effect of that was pretty
crazy. Yeah, exactly. That sort of like mowed the weeds.
Yes, indeed. But what the best thing about mid-season break and just, you know, doing these podcasts in the break is that we get to get people on the podcast who typically are, you know, they can't make a Sunday because they're working in F1, you know? They're kind of busy, right?
Yeah, they've got other things to do. We'll get them on team radio, maybe, like, yeah, during...
Maybe we'll hook that up eventually.
We actually should do that some
point. At some point, we can make that happen. We've got the production capacity here, I reckon we can do it. Yeah, we can pull that off. So today's guest is such a person who is typically otherwise active within the F1
indeed,
space
so
directly. Welcome to the podcast, Josh Hill. Josh, thank you for coming, mate.
Thank you for having me.
I was expecting
some sort of Miami driver style intro, you know?
Yeah, well, we've actually got Will.i.am waiting out there.
Wicked, awesome. Yeah,
you called cool. it. How the hell did you? Josh, thank you very much for coming. First of all, to anyone watching, can you just kind of explain your role in F1? Because you do work within the F1 circus, I like to call it. You do travel with a circus. What do you do?
So I work in the hospitality, doing their kind of activations for the sponsors and some commentary as well, and doing some sort of activities for guests that pay a ticket to have a bit more of an experience at the F1 event other than just sort of general admin. So it's good fun, and you get up close and sort of, you know, I'm using my knowledge of F1 that I've gathered over the years, you know, for something that I enjoy and talking about, and that I'm, you know, and it comes quite naturally to me as well. So but it was my first time sort of like over the last year. I've never really been on a microphone in front of a crowd of people
and then suddenly just
got thrown in the deep end, you know. So it's been interesting kind of learning that side of things.
That's often the best way, though. Chuck it in at the deep end, sink or swim.
With like one arm band on.
Do you remember your first time in front of a mic, Niren? Like having to do a presenting gig or like...
In front of people?
Yeah, in front of people. Because there's obviously, as scummy YouTubers that we are, like obviously it's very easy. Well, we're used to doing it in front of nobody.
Yeah, and when we get lulled into a false sense of security. That's the thing, because we'll be talking all day, every day. It's like waffling for a living.
We're sick at this.
I'm great, mate. Yeah, this is easy. This talking stuff. And then there's like 10 people in front of you like, shit.
Yeah, do you remember your first like shoot?
I think my first like presenting shoot was like actually in front of quite a few people as well. So I got jumped in the deep end quite a bit as well.
Yeah.
Which was, I don't know about yours.
I think it was a screen test for something, and it was like earpiece and everything.
I've been done, mate.
It was like big studio. It was like there was loads of people around. It was like almost like it was like a theater space. It's like crazy. Yeah. That was my very
that's
first.
Awful.
Apart from me, just
but it can't get harder than that. Yeah, as a first go.
And funny enough, I was fucking shit.
Yeah,
I was so bad. But I was like, what do you expect?
Yeah,
I guess. And since then, I've grown. I like to think if I did it again now, I'd do a much better job. But Josh, obviously, let's also mentioned that there is Hill rings a bell, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've heard that name before.
Something 1962, 1968, 1996 F1 World Championships ring a bell.
Yeah, I'm getting a little bit of a vibe there.
Yeah,
people often make that mistake. I'm actually the grandson of Phil Hill, the American. obviously my granddad's Graham. Dad is Damon, so yeah, that's where the name comes from.
Racing in the blood. Do you remember the first? Because how old were you when Damon won his 96 World Championship?
Five.
You were five,
so I don't really remember much of it.
Do you have any memories from?
No, and actually, we were fairly quite sheltered from it, me and my brother, because obviously of what happened to Ayrton. He was Dad's teammate at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, motorsport is dangerous, and it was really dangerous back then as well. I don't think people really give it credit for how dangerous it was back then. Mm. So once that happened, there was a kind of rule in my house where, the F1 wasn't shown on the telly until my dad was kind of done racing essentially, because the last thing my mum or my parents wanted to happen was me and my brother sitting down in front of the telly going, "There's Dad," and then, you know, something awful happens. So that was like kind of my memory of it was only really kind of going to the occasional races. So I remember going to Monaco when I was very, very little, looking through a gap in the barrier and seeing a kind of blur go past, and then that was about it, because I wasn't tall enough to go over the barrier over the barrier yet, so much taller now. So that's kind of really my memory of it. That's all.
That's super interesting. Like, again, it's the human, the real life kind of side that is behind it, because obviously that was that weekend where, you know, it wasn't just Senna, Ratzenberger as well. Did that, I guess within the household, because what that was that the year you were born? Was that the year after you were born?
91 I was born, so that's okay. 3 years after I was born. So my dad had won in 96.
Do you think that kind of changed that kind of family approach to motorsport? Because I mean, motorsports had always been dangerous, particularly, you know, it's only gotten safer since. So at every point before that, you know, the 70s was more dangerous than the 80s, and the 60s were more dangerous than the 70s.
Exactly.
So it must have been aware of it the whole time.
Of course. And I think my dad was even more aware of it than anyone else would have been as well, because, you know, he used to watch his dad going away racing, and it was so bad that he used to expect someone to die on the weekend. You know, they expected one person not to come back. But it's I don't want to make a downer on this episode.
No, it's true.
Yeah. I think it's important to acknowledge, like, that's where the sport was.
I think most racing drivers would say as well. I mean, you hear about all the sort of people going like, "Oh, I've got no fear. I'm like, whatever. I'm not scared or anything." And then you hear the other people who kind of succeed and going, "That's a really stupid approach, to be honest."
Yeah.
Like, you've got to have a little bit of fear and a little bit, as racing drivers, you are risk assessors the entire time, you know, whether you're lining up an overtake or whether you're deciding what would be mentally good for your children to see. So, you know, it's an interesting.
You can't be totally fearless. You've got to actually think about things.
Yeah.
You
know? Well, kind of.
I know, right?
Obviously, I know it's dramatized, but I guess it's put in from real life, right? Rush, the movie. They touch on that a little bit with, you know, when Nicky wants to kind of cancel the race because of the rain at the Nürburgring, and some drivers are much more kind of, like you say, I think.
You got to remember he burst into flames once, so you got to.
Well, that's what I mean. And like, someone like Jackie Stewart. He's like always been a proponent of like safety. I guess you're over the years, some drivers have been more like one way inclined or the other, but I think it's always been the case. Like, we see that more now because we see all these drivers' characters and personalities, that they are so different.
Yeah.
And I imagine if you took this generation of drivers and put them in cars in the 60s, they'd all have their own, like Vettel would take a certain. And kind of
approach,
it probably,
and Max would be very different.
Exactly.
Yeah.
100%.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So do you remember the first race that you went to? So were you able to go to a race when your dad was competing?
Yeah. So like I said, I went to Monaco when I was very young.
What, do you remember what year that was?
I mean, that would have been maybe, I think he was still at Williams, because I remember the Williams hospitality. I mean, back then it was literally a truck or a bus with the awning coming out.
Yeah,
the side.
But that's changed.
It's really changed. Since then, when the first time I saw the McLaren kind of, you know, their old one, the Death Star, you know, as I used to call it. It was just ridiculous. It's like a three-story kind of like skyscraper in the paddock. It's mad. But like, I remember going to races. I remember going to Barcelona as well when he was at Jordan. So that was when he was a bit more kind of relaxed, and I think he knew he was retiring at that point as well. So he was quite happy to sort of bring me along to stuff like that. And, you know, I meet loads of people in the paddock who know me from when I was 2-3 years old, you know. At the last round, I worked with my dad's old peer, like just by chance, you know. Annie Bradshaw, who used to do my dad's kind of PR when he was at Williams. So, you know, the person in the press pit holding the kind of recorder next to their mouth, that she used to do that. And she's got a picture of her holding me on a quad bike when I'm like two, 3 years old.
That's,
and she's telling me stories. Yeah. So she's got a good story about me kind of spraying Frank Williams with a hose once, so completely soaking him. So, I was around the paddock and I, you know.
Does it feel like, obviously, now that you kind of work within and you said earlier, you know, you're going to be gone to most races this year and going forward. Like, does it feel like a bit of a family, given that you were exposed so early to it?
It is very nice having people that have known you come up to you. And like, you know, motorsport is a bubble. It's so small. And like you said, F1 is a circus, right? It's a traveling circus. And you're going to cross over the same people over and over again in different shapes and forms. So, yeah, it's nice sort of, I've got a kind of like, there is that feeling when I'm in the paddock that I'm at kind of home almost like, but I can't express in what way it make me feel like that. Mm. But, you know, you see people do it, like, it's kind of, I don't know, if you're at the gym and you've been at the gym for ages, and you can tell a newbie from looking at how they're moving around and picking things up and racking things up, you know, it's like, you can just tell that by looking at them, and you're looking around the paddock and you can tell the people who aren't used to being in the paddock of other way they're behaving, and they're kind of like, it's not a bad thing, you know, it is a weird environment, you know.
That was me at Silverstone, man, because I got to go with Red Bull and PokerStars in the paddock, and I was like, oh my god, I was just going around,
just seeing
the food was so good, I just kept taking it, like the people walking around with the canapes, and I was like, can I have three, please? And like, it's so good.
Just seeing the most like mundane thing, mate, in the F1 paddock, and you're like, oh my god, that's a wheel gun, yo.
You do one of the jobs you do is doing occasional sort of paddock tours for people. You take VIP from the paddock club and you sort of wander them around the paddock and point out things, and you kind of have to go like, no, don't stand on the wing, like that's don't do that. Please don't touch that.
Timmy wants to stand on the wing, so he'll stand on the wing.
Yeah, don't, you know, yeah.
Timothy.
Yeah, don't pick Lando up. It's not, you know, it's little things like that, and you know, they're constantly trying to wander off into their garage or because they just think it's free rain as well, and you're kind of going, it's not really, you know, it's like you're going backstage, you know, so it's interesting to sort of see a lot of different people's reactions, you know. I do quite like that side of it.
How was the so obviously you work kind of paddock club behind the scenes, high entry point, I'm sure, like ticket prices I'm sure aren't cheap. How has that changed, like how do you think that's changed since the Drive to Survive generation, or not even so much more like Liberty Media have taken over? Has that kind of side of things changed a lot from when it was in Bernie's hands to now being in Liberty's hands, like that kind of that more kind of high ticket price premium kind of behind the scenes exposure?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing Liberty Media did was go to all the teams and go like social media, like just do as much of it as possible. That's the first thing they did, because Bernie didn't want any of that. So it's just huge. I mean, it's the demographic you get now from all different backgrounds, and you get people coming up to you who you just would not expect to be like hardcore F1 fans now. It's really cool. I mean, like I wasn't working in the paddock before Drive to Survive. I only came in kind of just after it sort of had kicked off after a few seasons or something. And obviously COVID was when it really came out on Netflix. So it was interesting to see the kind of boom and how quickly as well F1 sort of just got going again. It wasn't like it was a sort of slow trickle to get the sort of crowds coming back in.
Yeah.
It was just like from the word go, everything was booked out, everything was sold out. It's really interesting and really, really good, I think. And you know, Drive to Survive gets a big bashing in the media and all the time for like this and that and whatever. But the one thing it has done is just like bulk purchase kind of fans, just like chuck them in to F1 and gone like, there you go, have at it. And it was a bit, you know, it was a bit kind of fractious at first, wasn't it? Like with, because they came in two seasons that were very, very exciting, but also very contentious. I think that because of it was just very volatile, you know. It was almost like crypto market at some point, you know. It was just up and down all the time. Like sometimes you had like all the Max fans going crazy because Lewis had done something, and then you got all the Lewis fans going crazy because Max had done something, and it to me, it came across like a kind of it became like a football team kind of thing, you know. It's just like, you know,
quite tribal.
Yeah, you got like almost kind of hooliganism. It's like, which was doesn't really but fit
did,
the F1
did you get
mold,
that energy in the paddock? Because obviously we see from like the fans in the stands and general admission and grandstand, but like those people, yeah, did you get that same feeling of that kind of tribal almost like within the paddock as well?
Yeah.
Sophisticated tribal.
Take that. Take a bit of pit of bread at you or something like that. Yeah. No, I've just caught the end of the kind of, is it, you know, because although Verstappen is, it just, I mean, can't fault him. Like the whole Red Bull team, in fact, like I just, everyone, through the whole thing, it's just doing probably one of the best jobs in the whole team I've ever seen. From top to bottom, it's just incredible at what they're doing. But unfortunately, it makes the sport a little bit boring because you just know the outcome every single time when Max is like, wherever he starts, he wins, you know? So you can see now with the hardcore Max fans, they're all kind of like, you know, we do these things called truck tours where, you know, at sort of lunchtime in between when nothing's going around the track, we load a load of guests onto a truck. You might have seen one going around. And two of us stand at the front with mics and kind of bounce off each other. It's like a kind of podcast on a truck.
I remember it still. One of them came round and it was getting booed.
Was it?
Yeah. Silverstone's not even the worst one.
It was like Austria. But then everyone had like left by the time it came round.
They're all Max fans in Austria, so they don't really care. But Silverstone's not even close to being the worst one for that. But I won't say who is. But
I felt kind of bad, but it was also quite funny.
It is quite funny. You know, and you're told as well before you go on the track, like, don't mention the booing, and you're kind of going, so it's
saying boo everyone.
There was one, I won't say the circuit, but there was one moment where and it had been particularly kind of bad this weekend, but you know, you go into this kind of like amphitheater section of the circuit where there's loads of grandstands around. It's kind of like an iconic part of the track, and it's a good place to just soak in the atmosphere, you know. So I said that, I was like, I'm just gonna go silent for a little bit as you just sort of soak the atmosphere in. It's just an amazing place to be on the circuit. Put the microphone down and it just was booing, just the constant. And then it's kind of like, can't really start again now. I've got to give it like 15 seconds before I get on the microphone again. So yeah, it was a bit of a weird one, but anyway, I forgot where we were. Sorry.
Soaked in the atmosphere.
It's great. I love it. That's why I guess it's like different experiences for, because, you know, if you want to get that kind of paddock access, what would you say, you know, to anyone watching who, you know, it's something obviously you want to save up for and maybe it's something you want to do as like a big one-off kind of thing. What is the kind of range of price that people are looking at to get kind of paddock access? From like cheapest to like, what's the most expensive? What was like money or can buy if you've got the bag? Like how premium can you go?
So, I mean, I was in Monaco. Obviously it's going to be Monaco, isn't it? So,
makes sense.
We had the Paddock Club yacht, which is, you know, because...
Is that the one you snuck onto and got kicked off?
Yeah, by accident. Happened to dock in.
We didn't pay anything.
Oh, sorry.
No, it was not.
Some of that, thanks. So the yacht was kind of, because Monaco is obviously really tight on space, so the paddock club, the actual paddock club section there, that's the usual paddock club, is quite small in Monaco. It's on the outside of Raskas, the second last corner. So they had a kind of additional yacht, but they obviously then bumped the price up for that. I think it was about 10, 12 grand for a ticket. I'm not sure on the exact price, but like, it was punchy. But you know, it's Monaco, so people want to do that. You know, they want, and the yacht was on the exit of the chicane, so it was a great place to watch, especially when the rain started. And and again, one of our jobs is to commentate while the race is going on. It was very loud, so it was struggling to do that outside. But we're kind of commentating on the stuff that's happening on the telly, and you look across, and they're just coming sliding out the tunnel, like across the runoff, and going all over the place. It was chaos. It was the yacht was is probably about as high up as you can go. Yeah. I mean, I don't know about Vegas yet.
I feel like we're going to see some crazy, crazy prices and some crazy, crazy prices.
You going to Vegas?
No, not confirmed at the moment. Ooh, so yeah, we're still sorting things out.
That must be from I'm sure, you know, whether you go or your colleagues or whatever, Vegas feels like that's the big event of the year. Right?
Everyone is asking about Vegas.
Yeah, yeah.
Am I going to Vegas? And I go, I can't tell you anything.
Yeah. So but I bet Paddock at Vegas is going to be mad.
What's one thing that you think should be part of the Paddock Ooh, Pass?
Yeah.
For Vegas.
That's a good one.
What should be part of
53 slot machine? No, I'm good.
helicopter to the Grand Canyon. And then you rappel to the track.
Yes. I hear that. During like FP3 or something. Yeah. Like no one's watching.
There's an opportunity because, well, the thing is, right, there's all this talk about how, you know, F1 events are selling out loads, which is great, but unfortunately also a lot of the venues are hiking their prices up, which is, you know, a lot of like everyday regular fans can't afford it. But in terms of these premium kind of high ticket price tickets, are they receiving the same level of like super high demand?
It really depends on the Grand Prix. You know, it's not like Belgium, for instance, it's quite a quiet event really. I mean, they don't really have the capacity for the general admin, first of all. Like they don't have the kind of like size and scope that other places do. Even the track's like the longest one, it's, if you've ever been to Spa, it's really difficult to put the grandstands around. It's a difficult place to work with. And the actual Paddock Club, you know, as much as we all love Spa and we all love Belgium, like as the Grand Prix, it's not the most glamorous one out there. It's for the kind of diehard, hardcore, you know, Grand Prix enthusiasts out there. And it's not like, you know, Miami where it was, you know, there was a lot of people who didn't know anything about F1 and didn't seem to care too much about if they knew about F1. They just liked the event, you know. It was a big event to go to, and it's kind of just cool to watch it unfold.
It's been quite a big increase in that as well, by the way, like sort of celebrities who are okay with the fact they don't understand anything about Formula One, but just kind of are there for the event rather than racing itself.
100%. Again, not naming names or locations. No. There was one particular moment where I was doing a paddock tour and I had to kind of redo walking out of the paddock with my guest into the building, kind of into the paddock, pointing at things with the guest because they were filming it for a Instagram kind of thing. And and we had to do it like 15 times. You wanted to, sure, we'll do it again. Yeah. People are kind of like, you know, there's a lot of people out there going like, I don't like how it's changing and stuff like that. But like, you know, I'm sure people were doing that in the 90s compared to the 80s, you know, it's like, it's the same thing. It's the same difference. It's just evolving with the times. And it's like, it's just this new kind of brave new world of social media for F1, where it's been kind of very isolationist up until then with the whole social media kind of blackout it had.
For a sport that historically, you know, in terms of when it was founded in the 50s and like it's always had, like Monaco has always been this glamorous event, like F1, it's funny how I think F1 has it's really interesting how it's cultivated such a broad fan base for a sport that, you know, historically and like to get into, it's very difficult to get into as like a working class kind of, but the stories of obviously Lewis and Esteban, who drivers have come from very little, but it's very hard to kind of make your way into it without that kind of support. But obviously for you, obviously with, you know, your granddad being Graham Hill and your dad being Damon Hill, like how much driving did you do when you were younger? And did you ever see that as being a potential, maybe I could be the third F1 world champion?
Look, there was a time when
there's still a chance.
We were talking earlier about our backs hurting.
we were sharing stories over going bus 30. You got something to look forward to.
I'm on the way. That's, I'll be there soon.
Half of that's from shoehorning myself into a small single seater for my, like when I was growing. So there was a time when I was going, you know, I'm going to be the third generation here in Formula One. And it's like, it's not that simple, is it? So, I think the story of my granddad getting to Formula One is very kind of, it's, worlds apart from what you hear nowadays from how people get into Formula One now. You know, my granddad answered an advert in a newspaper to go and drive a Formula car around Brown's Hatch, and he went there, and the guy went, "You're all right at this," and he went, "Oh, I have another go." Did that again, and then and then just signed up as a mechanic at Lotus and just waited for his chance to have a go in the F1 car, and then that was it basically. So,
and then he won 2 F1 world champions.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's
that's crazy.
It's kind of like, I mean, I could be glossing over a lot of details there, but that's the general gist of it.
Mm.
And my dad raced bikes until he was 20 something, so he was, and then got forced into cars by his mum. Who didn't like how dangerous bikes were. And then it was becoming more like a ladder back then. You know, you do your Formula Ford, then your Formula 3, and then Formula 3000, and then F1. And you still need money. The whole time, you always need money.
Mm.
I mean, I look at the cost now of just getting to F2, and it's astronomical. Like, compared to what I used to, even when I raced, I stopped racing stopped single-seater racing in 2013. And it was about 1.2 mil euro to get a seat in Formula 3.5 or like Renault Formula 3.5 or like Formula 2.
Mm. And that's what you have to stump up as a driver, be that through sponsors or just through, you know,
just money that you have.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas that's now the cost of an F3 drive.
Is that a season?
That's a cheap one. The F2, F3 is like 2 mil. Yeah. Like,
that's easy. One season as well.
Yeah. F3. Yeah. 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 It's just eye watering, you know, and it's such a barrier, I think, to so many people out there, you know, but
do you think can we get those costs down? Because obviously you've got to pay for personnel, you've got to pay, like, it will always be expensive motorsport inherently.
Yeah.
But like, is this just what it has, we have to just accept it, or is there a way of getting this down, do you think?
I think we're finding the boom of F1 is working against itself in terms of the feeder series, right? Because now it's become so popular, they can start charging these premiums on drives and stuff. And it just is what it is. I mean, it's motorsport at the end of the day. It is expensive. It's not like you just go into JD Sports and get yourself a pair of football boots and go and kick a ball around. It's not that. Like, you know, you got to have a load more kit just to put on your person, and then you got to get a car. You know, just to gear yourself up to actually get in the car.
So much risk.
Yeah,
it's so risky.
That's the thing as well, isn't it? It's like, how do you explain to like your family, I need like 600 grand. To go and do like one season in a championship that's like four rungs down a ladder from Formula One.
Yeah.
Or you can go play it.
Or you can go kick a football against a wall.
It's shin pads, mate. There you go.
Yeah.
It's like,
that's what, like, obviously, look, I love motorsport. I love racing. I want to see a bigger variety of people being able to get into it. But also, for everyone who makes it, there's countless drivers who don't. And when I say makes it, that's not even to F1, just having a career as a racing driver. But there must be so many people, again, when I hear about like Esteban Ocon's story, when, you know, his family sold the mechanics and they just put motorhome, drove around with their dog, drove around Europe, going to karting events. If Esteban doesn't make it, if he doesn't become a racing driver, God forbid what happens with the family, because they've sold their home. Like, there must be so many stories like that. So part of me is like, oh, like, it's great to push it, but also the risk, if it doesn't pay off, it is so much higher than, I don't know, just putting your time into going football and, all right, maybe you've got a parent who drive you to some matches, like, you know, a couple of hours away or whatever.
But
the loss doesn't seem as severe, that you have to, burden you have to take on to actually put your kid through motorsport. And like you said, I don't think that's going to change.
No, exactly. And I mean, you know, when I was racing as well, I mean, I started in 2006, 2007, because
was that in karts?
Karts. Yeah. Well, I did it. Well, I sneer at it. It was great. I did a year of Club 100, which is if you want to go karting.
Steve does that, doesn't?
If you want to go karting for a good budget and get some good competition. Like, it's the best thing in the world. Like, they don't change the tires all year, so I've been out on sleet and snow, and we're on slicks, you know, around Wilton Mill, and it's like you're clinging on to the thing. But then I got into a race car, and it, you know, rained for the first time, put wets on. I went out, I was like, this is fantastic, I got so much grip, I can actually drive this thing, you know. So it's you know, I started racing in 2007, say, like, for cars, did various different single seaters on the way up. I ended up in European from the three, the whole way through, you know, you're going like, it's privileged, right? You know, but you know, kind of you're kind of pointing at everyone, going, we're all privileged. Mm. You know, we're going motor racing. It's not like, you know, I know people who I raced against who worked their ass off to stump up enough cash for the next race, and that was it. And then they have to do it all again. And like, I've got like the utmost kind of respect for that now, especially now as well, because I know how difficult it is. Like, at the time, I don't think I really knew that was how difficult it was. I thought, you know, just like, you'd be good at, I can drive car good, you know, so I drive car good, you give me fast car, that's it, you know. So it was a lot of growing up I did in that kind of period. Like, I know it's when I was still 15, you know, but
Of course. You can only have your own perspective on the situation. And so you got to Euro F3.
Yeah.
What was your particular races memorable, best performance, worst performance?
Well, I actually did half the season and then I called it there because I was like, I just wasn't enjoying it anymore, really.
Right.
No, I know it sounds really like kind of, what's the word, kind of ungrateful, but it is true. I just wasn't kind of, it wasn't, I hadn't grown up in the thing. It's not as stupid as it is to say. Like, I mean, having my dad and my granddad, we were still kept from it, you know?
Yeah.
I wasn't kind of like shoved into it like some other people are from a very young age. So I was actually sheltered from it. So, I did a good race in Hockenheim. I think it was round 20 or something like that. I don't know. I can't remember. But overtook, if you know Hockenheim, the fast sweeper coming into the stadium section. I think it was Lucas Auer and Tom Blomqvist were fighting up ahead of me, and I saw them kind of going near side to the inside to the corner. I'll have him here. So I've been sat in fourth for days. So I was just like, fifth place for days. So I was I'm getting bored now. So and then suddenly something happened. I was like, oh, hello. they, you know, defended each other and then ran wide onto the exit, onto the grass sort of Velcro strip or whatever they had back there. And nipped up the inside, cut back and kind of took them both before the hairpin. And that was like FIA overtake of the year or something like that. So I was quite proud of that one. So I was quite happy with that. So, that was a podium as well. So,
nice.
So I'd had a pretty rough start to the year because again, I was kind of always, it always just felt to me like I was having to start from, you know, day dot every single time I started it and got in a new car. Because I'd missed out on the sort of really young stage of driving where you just becomes natural. You can jump in a car and just like it's breathing, you know?
Yeah.
And do this sort of the finer things that you can adjust. But I needed to kind of like really learn a car to really then be fast in it. Once I did, I was fast. You know, I don't have any problem saying that. I was quick, but it took me a while to kind of get to that point, and that was always kind of by the point that I was kind of done with that category and then I move on. So it never kind of, you know, materialized into some really, really good results, unfortunately.
That realization that like you weren't enjoying it and you wanted to knock it on the head, was that quite a sudden realization, or had that been kind of growing for time? And like, how did you go about being like, I'm done now? Because that was quite a kind of brave call to make, that you're like being, you know, honest with yourself that like this isn't for me.
I mean I've always been quite honest with myself, I think. It's but then you always have to kind of like just get your head down sometimes and just push through it. But it wasn't just that I was going through a bad patch at that point. I just wasn't enjoying the whole thing, right? I like the racing. I like turning up to the weekend and going racing and wheel to wheel with people. That was enjoyable to me. But the rest of the whole thing, I just wasn't kind of clicking with. It wasn't it sounds really stupid, but like it wasn't me, right? It wasn't what I was, and I'm competitive, but I'm not kind of like in your face competitive.
I think inflation itself is such a small part of the overall, like,
that's
traveling the around. Finished product.
It's 1% of what you do. That's what no one tells you. If there's a young go-karter out there and you want to go go-karting, it is literally 1%. Once you get out of karts, you're going to be racing in a car for 1% of the time you are a racing driver. That's why, you know, all the drivers in F1 just can't, you know, you can see they're just dying to get back in the car. They don't want to do all the press stuff. They don't want to do all the extra stuff. Yeah. Get in the car. Like Kimi was my idol because he was just like, get in the car, go racing. You know, you wanted to do that. So, and Alonso, I was just like, they're my two. Like, they are my idols growing up. I know it's dad as well, but whatever.
We'll just hide for a second.
He's third behind.
He's all right, I guess. Dad was always like, an idol for me qualifying wise. Like, I mean, can't fault that. He was very, very good in qualifying. You know, you can argue he had the best car, but he still, you know, never missed the front row in 1996. So the racing needed work.
A
few dodgy overtakes, Dad.
Because we obviously met at your dad's kind of charity event for Halo.
Yeah.
That was what's the track?
Sandown Park.
Sandown, that's it. And we were on a team, and then your dad, he was on a team with Johnny and Perry McCarthy and a couple of others as well. And you two were like battling at the start.
Yeah.
But Damon spun.
He did spin.
Which I think we all quite enjoyed from the side.
Lap one, I believe, as well. Yeah, lap one.
He was just on his own. He just spun on his
brakes. Yeah, he had flashbacks to Monza when he drove into Silent Schumacher, I think, maybe. But no.
But you two were scrapping for a few laps, actually.
We were, but I just want to state we had a dodgy car. Like, for sure.
We did. Yeah. We definitely had a
no top end. Stop it. I'm really heavy. Quite tall as well. Yeah.
This is true.
Yeah.
We finished sixth in the end. We actually did right, didn't we?
Yeah, I think so.
We finished sixth.
I'll take that.
I'll chuff with that. Yeah. We finished ahead of your dad's team.
Went back later on after you'd all gone home and, you know, just pounded around and started setting lap records. So you just to make yourself feel better. And I'm way past the lap record stage in my life, I think. So.
And obviously now that kind of phase of, well, I guess you're, and obviously your dad still works in the broadcasting a lot. Which must be like quite cool. Do you bump into him much during weekends? Obviously you're working in F1 Paddock. Sometimes working with Sky and whoever. Like, do you bump into him much?
Yeah. I mean, it really depends again on the event, right? Because it could be that their Sky pad and everything is right down there, and we're up in the other end of the paddock club, and we don't have time to go and sort of say hi or whatever. But sometimes you do, and sometimes it just links up where he's not doing anything, I'm not doing anything, and we'll just be wandering through the paddock. But you know, I see him every day, so it's not like I need to kind of like go, hi, Dad. You know. There was one moment though, my first ever event working for this paddock club stuff. We're doing a truck tour in Bahrain, and I was still learning the trade, right? So I'm learning sort of how to talk in a microphone to a group of people. And Bahrain, like, you get like 10 people on your truck. It's really quiet. So it was a good one to just kind of like get comfortable on a microphone and just waffling your way around, because that's essentially what you're doing. You're just kind of speaking out loud all the time, thinking out loud even. And we're doing this really late night one. Come around turn 9 and 10, a horrible left-hand downhill hairpin thing. And as we're driving away, I hear Josh in the distance. I'm going, who's that? Or who's calling my name in Bahrain at like 10 p.m. at night? Josh. I'm like, and I look into the runoff, and my dad's just stood in the middle of the runoff on his own, like at 10 p.m. at night.
GC, just like...
like holding his phone filming us. I'm like, what? I don't know what to say. So I kind of just stay on the microphone, that's my father. And that's become a bit of a sort of catchphrase in the Sky camp, because he then obviously showed that video to everyone. But he was trying to get to the Eric Clapton concert, which is in the arena.
Just walk across the track.
It's on the arena on the outside of turn three. And I'm like, what? You see, just walk there as the crow flies. Can get a taxi. You know, it's like, It's a bit. Look,
as an F1 world champion, he's. I feel like he's owed the hallowed ground that these drivers race.
Although he's the Bahrain International Circuit.
You know what I do? Like, is it?
Have your a statue of him in the run-up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he was
one day. Is your dad's Instagram handle? Is it Instagram 96 F1 world champ?
Yeah, 96 F1 champ.
I love
champ.
That. It's not his name. He's 96 F1 world champ. Yeah. Just to remind everyone. I mean, I'd do the fucking same. Yeah. World champion.
Call it,
I'm not changing everything. When I did my video with Lando and Oscar, I almost changed my name to Lando and Oscar.
Yeah.
I'm just rolling with it. You in quadrant. Lando sat on my lap once.
Sando. Yeah. A bit of a long one. It doesn't really roll off the tongue, but yeah.
I love that. That was really special.
I mean, he's competitive in the sense that I'm the same way. Like, he's not like outwardly competitive, but he really, really wants to win and beat whoever he's doing.
Mindset's a necessity.
And one thing he told me, which was, I think it was after my first win, he went, "You have 24 hours where you're allowed to be the most unbearable prick ever. But once 24 hours is up, you got to turn that off and be back to normal again."
Yeah.
And I went, "Yes, okay, I understand. That's fair." You know, you can't just keep, you know, you win one race, you can't just run around with your chest, you know, puffing your chest out all weekend.
No, only for so long.
Yeah, you could if you want to, but you'd be
too hard sometimes.
Yeah, I think the key word in there was unbearable. You know?
Yes.
You can be unbearable for 24 hours.
Yeah, you got 24 hours.
So that was probably the best bit of advice he gave me. So
Also, I was going to ask. Again, given you're working in the paddock, you're going to come across, I'm sure come across a lot of faces that you recognize and, you know, high profile people. Is there anyone you've been like positively surprised about their entry? Because we know there's a lot of, you know, like, Tom Holland's a big F1 fan, Lewis fan, Rowan Atkinson, like there's all these names. But was there anyone you came across that you recognized that actually they were like super switched on to it?
I'm not like... bumping into celebrities every single day. You know, I'm not like every single weekend, like just chilling, you know, Keanu and Tom Cruise. You know? It's not like that, you know, not yet at least. Yeah, exactly. But, not really, you know, it's not like I've been kind of blown away by people's knowledge. Cause again, it's one of those things where you're in it for so long that almost nothing can surprise you anymore.
Yeah,
kind of
going, I guess so.
But, you know, you get the occasional person sort of, I can't really remember off the top of my head, mate. The weekends are kind of a blur anyway, so it's like, yeah. But you do get excited when there are celebs around, because like you could get to meet someone pretty cool, you know. Like I was told that I was gonna take Tom Cruise to a corner once and just sort of so he could have a close look, and then he pulled out at the end. He was like, "Nah," and I was like, "Yeah, fair play. You're in hospitality. You don't want to go stand on the inside of Stowe, you know. Just like go to your car going like that." I mean, fair play. But, I'm quite excited to see Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney in.
Oh, that'll be
especially
great.
Especially Rob, because I'm a massive Always Sunny fan. So, I love that show so much. And, like, if he kind of sort of, and they do a kind of, if they do a Welcome to Wrexham style thing with Alpine, maybe that'd be kind of cool.
Got to think that's surely in the works. Yeah. What about this this F1 movie that's going on? What have you made of that? You know, that because the team's obviously knocking about, like, they look proper legit as well.
Yeah.
But do you see many of the personnel in the paddock? And, what have you made of that?
I mean, the big one was Silverstone, because they have their own garage, which is
right plumb in the middle as well, which I was quite surprised about.
Yeah, I mean, look, to have the kind of influence and sway to just get onto an F1 grid without actually partaking in the event and drive away at the start of the race and stuff was just, it shows you how seriously they're taking it.
Yeah.
And they are... It goes both ways, you know, doesn't it? Mm. You never kind of get a racing or a sports movie where it kind of lands in the middle and goes, "Yeah, it's all right." It was either really good, like, or
terrible.
I'm hoping, you know, because it's Brad Pitt, it's more like Moneyball, you know, because that's an epic movie. But it was interesting to see them in the paddock because they blended in so well, you know, that it was easy to see their garage, you know, that was fine. That was, you know, you could see the garage and the cars were going around as much as they could in the gaps and stuff like that. And I know a few of the people doing the driving for them and stuff like that. So, you know, they're posting on the socials and stuff like that. So, But the thing that they didn't really catch is the people walking around the paddock dressed in, you know, Apex Grand Prix overalls and looking like the team principals and stuff like that. And they kind of, you could just walk past them and kind of genuinely think they're a team.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're completely made up, and you know, they're walking
literally
around.
Paid actors.
Yeah, yeah. They're just walking around like they are. You know, you see them all come out of the motorhome, their hospitality, and then sort of walk to their garage like an F1 team would.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And it's fascinating. It's really interesting. And they, like I said, they look like they're really going for it.
They
I think with something like F1, you have to just go 110%. You can't go half in.
Yeah,
you know?
You can't. I think, do you think you can end up with a film where it's like an F1 fan could watch it and go, oh my God, this is like not even slightly what it's like, because you'll just get killed for that.
No. Yeah. Because it's the drive to survive thing, right? It's like instantly everyone becomes experts.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Knows exactly everything about it.
Yeah.
So if you pull punches, people are going to spot.
Yeah.
And they're going to kind of call it out.
And if you're, you know, getting that respect from within the paddock and within the sport, which I feel like, again, they've done everything they can to like not get in the way. And what was it? I think it was on Yuki's driver cam. You could see, I think it was after Silverstone, and they plonked one of the Apex cars in the kind of, you know, the big like holding pen where all the cars go at the end of the race before they all get checked.
Yeah.
It was just there. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, did it do the race? It was just there. They just slid it in. No one saw it. It was very, very minimal. So yeah, I've got good expectations for the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
But hopefully, well, I mean, right now, a good F1 movie would help, because it is, like you said, becoming a bit of a, you know, we know who's going to win each race going into each race.
An F1 movie at this point is someone other than Max Verstappen winning.
Exactly. Which, look, at the end of the day, all periods of dominance end at some point, okay, over the generations. Mm. And this is always, and we've kind of talked about this, you know, before we went live, like this isn't particularly out of the ordinary. Yes, this is an exceptional period of dominance, but we've had that. You know, you look through most of the history of F1 and most seasons have been dominated by a team and or driver.
Yeah.
Most of the time. Who do we think's catching them first? Because someone will catch Red Bull eventually, Josh.
Yeah.
Who do we think? Obviously, Mercedes, Ferrari, McLaren, Aston Martin look like the biggest potential.
The group behind, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Aston Martin's on the wane. I think by the looks of it, I don't know if they've got a big upgrade package coming up, so I don't really.
They need one, don't they?
I've lost
momentum.
They started their season so strong. I mean, I can't even express the kind of like excitement in the paddock that Aston Martin was suddenly this, and after Alonso
this sort of
thing.
Your boy.
Yeah. It was quite funny actually, because this season I've only just started doing the kind of like interviews in the paddock club, like interviewing some drivers and stuff like that. And I was kind of really thrown in the deep end in Saudi, because I did like a bit of emceeing, a bit of commentary in Bahrain, and they were like, okay, we're going to throw you a few interviews in Saudi, because the other person who usually does the interviews isn't coming to this one. So we can chuck you a few and we'll split it between the other person who's coming. Mm. The other person who's coming then got COVID, so they couldn't go. So then I was doing all of them. So I was doing, and it was Aramco, so I was basically doing the entire Aston Martin team.
Yep.
And I was interviewing Fernando Alonso in my first weekend interviewing anyone. And we were late, and it was like, oh God, and it was him in his prime right now, you know, and stuff like that. So I was kind of shitting myself, to be honest, not gonna lie. And it's my idol, you know. Oh my God, it's Fernando Alonso. And he was so professional, so easy to interview, you know. Mm. And it was really, really good fun, actually. And I've done plenty more since then now, so
yeah.
A bit more up to speed. But yeah,
well, I think Fernando's like, I think he's surprised. I mean, he certainly surprised me how he's still able to do the, you know, bring these levels at 42.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like,
extract like the most out of the car.
Yeah.
Every opportunity.
Because I don't doubt Fernando is, you know, it's just if asked, because they had such a good start to the year, it kind of set an expectation. Like even now, they're still comfortably within that kind of top five.
Yeah.
But it's just, they've not quite been able to keep up the...
Yeah. I saw an interesting thing, which is they split up the points into a kind of quarter season. So the first half of the season split in half. So, I mean, Aston Martin were obviously second place in the first half of the first half of the season.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they were fifth place in the second half of the first half of the season.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've really kind of lost some performance somewhere. I don't know if the tracks are just not suiting them anymore, or if they need to kind of, they're waiting on a big upgrade package, or but it's, if you don't keep up with, you know, if you don't swim with the current in Formula One, you quickly get swallowed up.
And it's so competitive behind Red Bull.
I think that's what it is. I think it's also like other teams around them have just got like better as well. Mm. Obviously McLaren have like found performance like crazily.
Yeah.
And obviously, you're always going to have Mercedes and Ferrari improving gradually over time. Mercedes have had loads and loads of upgrades too.
Mm. Yeah.
I think it is a thing of like, I always say it, like Aston had like all these, like this massive, massive upgrade at the start of the season.
Yeah.
And then they've had to go, right, cool, we've done that.
Mm.
Now we actually need to find out how to take the next step. And in that time, everyone else has kind of overtaken a little bit.
It almost seems like they had their car was fast. And it's like a Braun GP moment where like, oh shit, pretty fast. Now what? Yeah, exactly. Now where do we go? It almost seems a little bit like that. Like they don't really know how to maximize what they've got.
Well, they brought an upgrade to Canada, and then they got the podium, but I think they then struggled. Like
that was,
upgrades don't guarantee. I think it was Gunther said this a while ago. He was like, you know, bringing an upgrade doesn't guarantee an actual uptick in performance, because you're bringing an upgrade based off of CFD, like scale model in a wind tunnel.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's where Aston Martin, I think this is the thing. It's like Red Bull have just consistently moved forward. Like the start of last year, they were no quicker than the Ferrari. The Ferrari was as quick as them, but they've just consistently, almost, it feels like in a straight line, move forward. Mercedes have kind of been going side and they're kind of up there, maybe second quickest, maybe third quickest car now. McLaren went from nowhere to like jump up. Aston went from nowhere to jump up. Ferrari have had the second quickest car on average this year and a second quickest in like high speed, low speed, medium speed, all that.
And they're fourth.
But then that's Ferrari and they do what they do.
Yeah.
And it's like, so it's like everyone else is faltering, and that's just making this, you know, where, like you said, Verstappen and Red Bull, they're just, it's just the military precision that they're just bringing every single race.
I think you've nailed it basically, because it's like, I mean, it isn't just that Red Bull and Max are so fast this year. I mean, you've got to, like you said, got to hand it to them. And Adrian Newey just designs cars like he just sort of wakes up in the middle of the night and just writes a car down, and then like that's the fastest car, you know. It's like, yeah, it just comes out of his brain.
He's been doing
like
it for years since your dad's era as well.
Exactly. You just follow his career trajectory through different teams, and they've all won championships once he's moved there. So no, but like it's not just that Red Bull are so much faster this year and they're absolutely nailing it, and they've nailed the formula, and they don't, like you say, they only need to make the small tweaks. They very rarely bring a huge upgrade to really change the kind of development of the car completely. But it's the other teams are doing a subpar job to what they usually do, right? Ferrari seem to be treading water. And the large upgrades they bring gets a marginal gain in performance, it seems to me, you know. At the same time, you've got to remember F1's moves forwards all the time. If they lined the current Red Bull up back at Bahrain at the start of the season and against the Red Bull they had back then, it would smash it, you know, because it would be so much faster already. Yeah. So Ferrari on their computer might have got, oh, we're gaining this much time, and then for Red Bull gain that much time as well, you know. So
that's what held Mercedes up, wasn't it? The theoretical performance of the zero pod.
Yeah.
Well, if you're operating windows that small, then what's the point?
You'll get one good performance out of it a season because the conditions were perfect.
Exactly.
We've asked this question before on it, because again, there will be a team that catches up to Red Bull eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not to Max, and that's a different story with the drivers, but which team are we saying now? Because I've said Aston Martin previously, because I think, you know, they got a lot of ATR at the start of this year, which they won't be able to we won't see the benefit of that until probably start of next year. Mm-hmm. Mercedes seem to have, now they've ditched the zero pod, maybe I've got a bit more confidence. Ferrari, they do have the next best car. McLaren are on such a positive trajectory and stuff. That's what I mean. Like, you can make a compelling argument for all four, but who are we saying today is the first team to catch up?
Mercedes.
You say Mercedes?
Yeah. I think the safe bet is Mercedes. Like,
it's the safe bet because they just know, like, as, they know how to as do a it. Team, they have that immediate, like, recent pedigree as well of sure. like, they've just, they have been making good cars and they have been dominant recently. Yeah. Like, surely they've got to find something soon.
Allison's back as well in the F1 team.
Yeah.
It's huge for them.
That's a big catch, yeah.
I want it to be McLaren, though.
My heart
says McLaren. But every other organ in my body says Mercedes.
Yeah.
Every single one.
Even
your skin.
Kidney.
The biggest organ of them all.
Is
your
that,
skin.
Is that as you count?
Yeah. Skin's an organ.
We're going to say your kidney.
Skin's an organ.
Yeah, skin is an organ. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The biggest organ.
Yeah, that's man. Crazy. I don't know why. I just never thought that was a thing, man. Biology. Come on. That's crazy.
Always. I still... It's all that ATR at the start of the year and Dan Fallows. I just
don't say it.
I still think Aston Martin with Fernando. I think Fernando in the Aston Martin starting next year, I think he will be the most competitive next to Max in the Red Bull still.
Well, out of interest, where will Stroll be whilst all this is kicking off?
Lance will get we'll get to the middle of next year and he'll have the odd podium, but then he will just have some absolute howlers as well. I think it will be kind of quite similar, to be honest, to how kind of relative to how Checo's season's gone this year. But Checo's either on the podium or he's like nowhere because he's fucked up qualifying.
Yeah, qualifying's gone disastrously.
Yeah, so I'm still sticking to my guns. I'm still saying Aston Martin are going to be the next. But
it's a big shout.
Bold from you.
Yeah.
That's big.
It's
2 out of 3, I'll say. That's a bold choice.
Listen, look, we'll see. All right, people thought I was... I'm sure I made a video like 2 years ago saying like Aston Martin are going to be the next champions in like 2026, and everyone laughed at me, and then they started this season.
You're not laughing now.
No, and then they started 22 really badly, and then I made a video backtracking on that, and then they started this year really good, so then I made another video retracting my backtrack.
Well, then you got to backtrack again, surely.
You
have to backtrack.
I should have backed
again.
Myself from day
a politician.
Yeah, I should do that. Maybe that's my alternative career. We've kind of strayed away from talking about the drivers, but I do now want to talk about Max, because thanks to Helmut Marko, who I've got to say for this podcast, because given us things to talk about, because Helmut Marko just says stuff and he's always just saying things. And this one's really interesting, actually. So, Helmut Marko has been quoted saying that he thinks basically Max Verstappen would take a pole position with a Haas or AlphaTauri in wet/dry conditions, which, to be fair, K-Mag kind of did, but it wasn't wet/dry and it just started raining. He said, if such conditions exist, he, Max Verstappen, puts an AlphaTauri or Haas, which is a qualifying car, on pole. So... does Max Verstappen...
I just want to know what question was even asked from Taft.
Yeah.
He probably asked, like, what's your favourite breakfast cereal?
Let me tell you something.
Yeah. Max's favourite is Cocoa Pops. Like,
Do we think Max would put a AlphaTauri or Haas? Because, look, Hülkenberg's put a Haas into Q3 6 of 12 races this year. Yuki's got to Q3. I don't know how many times Yuki's got to Q3, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure. The AlphaTauri's not been in there very often.
Mm-mm.
The Haas can be quick in qualifying trim. I don't think this... AlphaTauri, I think that's too big of a ask. A Haas, again, given Hülkenberg's performances... I think
what
the big
the
thing
conditions
is...
conditions different as well, did he say?
Well, it's drying if such conditions exist... which
what does that mean,
like on the moon or something? I don't know what, like where,
like all of the Dutch orange flares go on track and Max has his special like
no one else can see
basically the Dutch Grand Prix, which I feel like that's the sort of stuff that like a boxing promoter says, you know, about his fire. He's gonna knock his head off completely. He's gonna land in the back rows and stuff like that. You know, that's the sort of stuff that like, you know, people say about their driver to, you know,
hype him up
exactly, and put the, you know, fear into everyone else. So, yeah. But I I just personally can't see as good as Max. Are we putting someone else in the Red Bull?
Well, yeah, facts.
But that's the thing as well. He's got to beat Alonso in an Aston. He's got to beat Lewis in a Mercedes. He's got to beat Charles in a Ferrari. All in a Haas.
There's got to be a limiting factor, right? There has to be. Because like, how far is there a Haas? What has to happen?
Sorry.
Wait, what did you
say? No, we both clocked it at the same time.
There has to be.
Yeah.
He's still blocked by Haas, by the way.
What? You're blocked by Haas?
Yeah, blocked by Haas.
Ouch. Why?
So, it's actually, I was about to
we'll leave it. We'll talk about it.
It's not really a long story, to be fair.
Yeah, basically, you were just moving mad on Twitter.
And
you ratioed them like multiple times.
Yeah, when they signed Mazepin.
You were going in.
You're being an asshole.
Going in, and they weren't believed.
He was being a bit of a hassle. Well, look, because I think Jenson Button, there's a quote from Jenson as well I read. He thinks that, I think Max Verstappen is the fastest driver that has ever driven an F1 car. I really do. Jenson Button. Now, obviously, if Max is truly that good, you know.
I mean,
he's not as good as Damon, right?
No, of course not. But like, look. It's one of those impossible questions to answer, isn't it? It's like, you can't know ourselves, but ask it. You have to ask it, but you can't compare people from different generations as well, because like, I mean, Max is, you know, if you're familiar with sim racing and the world of sim racing, I don't know if they still use the term, but like back when it's sort of in its infancy, they used to call people aliens because like the stupid fast people were aliens, right? He is an alien. I think he just does it without even knowing how he does it. He's one of the best sim racers in the world as well. He probably fully understands how he's doing it and knows exactly how to set up a car so he wants to drive and to get the best for him. It's really easy when you've got relatively easy when you've got something like a Red Bull and an engine newly designed car to set up and an engineer like Lambiassi to help you do that as well. It is just an unbeatable trio in my eyes. And he is one of the fastest guys that has ever lived. Like, there is no doubting whatsoever. Yeah. And I'm sure, like, you know, I mean, there's a Twitter account I follow, F1 Statistics, that does quite interesting kind of stats and stuff. And one of the things I really find fascinating is Lewis Hamilton's stats, right? And everyone's going to call me a Lewis Hamilton lover now. Everyone seems to think, here we go. I'm putting my hat in that one. They used to call my dad like Lewis Hamilton hater, and now he calls him a Lewis Hamilton lover because he hates Max Verstappen. It's just ridiculous. Like, he's a pundit. This is what he does. It's his job. I've forgotten where I was, to be honest.
No, Max Verstappen being an alien.
He's an alien. He is just an alien, and he's one of the fastest people that has ever lived. And definitely the fastest guy.
And again, I think we'll appreciate this more in time.
The stats, sorry, that's what I was going to do. Yeah, exactly. So although, like, you know, you see some Lewis Hamilton stats, you go, that is just ridiculous. Like in 300 and something races that he's done, he's DNF 28 times or something like that, and he's only missed the points like less than that. Like, he's scored in basically every single race he's ever finished, and he's only not finished 28. So when you put it like that, it's mad, right? And when you put it as a percentage, it's so far above everyone else. Like, as a DNF ratio, it's just so far above everyone else. And Max had, you know, a turbulent start to his F1 career that kind of put that stuff like that in the kind of it kind of tarnished his record book, so to speak, at the start of his career. But like, given enough time, he'll surpass so many. I mean, he already is. He's close to getting Vettel's record of 9 races in a row.
Yeah,
he's helped Red Bull.
He can match that in Zandvoort, can't he? He can match it in Zandvoort, beat it in Monza potentially.
That's
the thing as well. Like, people use that against, you know, Lewis, and I've seen people try and use that against Max as well. Like, oh, they've always had like top cars, and I'm like, well, yeah, but Lewis literally came in as a rookie and matched Fernando Alonso, who just won 2 world titles. So what, you're not going to put him in a fucking in a Minardi at the back. Like, that's not going to happen. Like, and same with Max. Like, he came in at Toro Rosso and made that car, you know, him, and he did a much better job than Carlos first year. Like, he's only going to merit a better car.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason they swapped him for Kvyat, because they were like, we need to give this kid an opportunity straight away. And he won on debut. So, you know, the best drivers are going to get the best cars most of the time.
100%. That's the way it works. I mean, as frustrating as it is to watch for some people, that's always how F1's worked.
Yeah, that's just
like,
what it is.
It's not like you can buy your way onto the grid. Getting to the best car is another thing. Like, you can do some business deals and sort of move things around and stuff like that. And if you kind of level pegging with a driver, you might get the seat as well. There are certain things that you can swing it in your favor, that you can swing it towards you know, a bit more. But like, at the end of the day, the team wants that you're another part of the car, right? They want the fastest thing in the car, and that's going to be the fastest driver. So, you know, if you're the fastest driver, you get the money.
You don't need to pay a driver.
Yeah, I mean, some people do. Red Bull probably don't.
Yeah, they don't.
So they're kind of free in that choice that they can just pick the fastest guy, and that really helps them. And that's why they kind of just, as well, it just seems like this revolving door situation with the other seat is like, because they don't need to worry about who's paying the bills, you know, they've got that covered. So they can kind of just go sort them around. It's done. Yeah. So, it's,
that's the sport. Like, there's certain things you just have to accept, that it's not a spec series, and you're going to get this variation. And hopefully, again, like, I've got faith that next year is going to be, maybe it's Cope, but it was always going to take at least 2 years for these regulations and this cost cap to somewhat, you know, and again, we've had field spreads within a second in Q1, which we've never really had before.
Yeah.
You know, and again, like, yes, Max is dominating at the front, but the remaining 19, if you're including Checo, that there's a scrap to be, there's a story going on. And it's like, you know, back in at times in the 90s, 80s, like, throughout the sports history, you'd have someone dominating the front and then everyone else is still split by like a minute.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the case now. So there is, at least, that's why, again, when, is it boring? Yes, we don't have that compelling fight at the front, but there is still plenty of racing to enjoy.
Yeah.
Which is the main thing. And I've been loving a bit of IndyCar recently as well. Shout out to Scott Dixon at 43. Winning.
He's 43.
He's a year older than Fernando.
I was literally about to bring it up. Like, if you want to go and watch the fastest driver win, watch something like IndyCar F2. Like, that's that series, right? I mean, IndyCar, there's a slight difference in cars, but not massive. Great racing in IndyCar, and great racing in F2. This season, F2 has been mega. I don't know if you've been watching.
Yeah, it's mental.
There's some pretty,
for me, F1, F2, and Indy, that fulfills my motorsport. Yeah. I can't really get much more in. People are like, do you watch this? And I'm like, I'd love to watch more WRC and touring cars, but.
Yeah,
MotoGP as well.
It's tough. It's tough to keep up. What are you making in the F2 this year? Who's your tip for winning? See, Porsche's leading the way.
Porsche's just got the lead back, hasn't he?
Vesti
had a bit of a shocker.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of those ones where you're just sort of like having a, you know, just sort of looking about, and then someone nudges you in the elbow and you look around and there's a guy in the wall and it hasn't even started the race yet. And you're like, right, okay.
That clip was so crazy, because then in the background, Martin's was also spinning and it's like, how have we done this then?
Yeah, I don't think people really appreciate like how difficult it is. I mean, they talk about visibility all the time. Yeah. Try going, like, they go out on cold tires. They go out of the garages onto a track like Spa with stone cold tires, and it's one of the hardest things just to get to the grid when there's conditions like that. And it was just aquaplaning. It just completely, like, he braked, it locked up the rears, and it was done. That was it, and just completely caught him out. And it happens, you know. Sometimes it does happen, but. Porcher's looking pretty good. I think Vesti's just really, really, really fast on his day. He's won the most races, hasn't he, Vesti?
Well, I think so. He's just super consistent. He's always right up there.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he's won a load more races than anyone else. So I just think
Porcher's really consistent as well.
Behrman's won a few now, but he's way off points relative to Vesti. So I think it's that consistency that in the junior formulas, it's about not always about winning the races. No. It's just being there all the time.
Being there all the time. Exactly. Yeah. So exactly. It's about being on the podium as much as physically possible. Like, that's how you win a junior formula. And that's how you win a championship, to be honest. It's not like you don't have to win every single race. And especially when they put the scoring system like they have in F1, where they prioritize the top three spots, you know, if, you know, if you just keep finishing first, second, thirds, then you'll win eventually. And that's what Teo's proving. I mean, you can do it both ways, you know. Van Dorn just dominated. He just came in, just won every single race there was, basically.
And Roglic as well,
Roglic, yeah.
But I think, yeah, like you say, it's what the difference between first and second is 7 points, which is the same as, that's more points than finishing seventh.
Seventh
is 6 points.
Between first and second.
And that's just the difference between first and second.
So he's finished second so many times this season, though, I remember you saying as well.
Yeah, he's just been like... But in his third year, like, this needs to be it for him.
He's still young, but he's kind of got to...
Yeah, it has to be the year.
I think.
Yeah. Who's taking the title then?
I'll say Teo. Yeah, I'll say Teo. I'll say Teo. He did a
That's just mad. I love him.
Gave you a weird look. That he's a cool guy. I like him. And I interviewed him just after his race in Barcelona, where he went around the outside of two people at turns 1, 2, and 3 on the last lap to get a podium, you know, or get second place, something like that. And that was pretty cool. And he was like,
you can always rely on the F2 bringing banging racing.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter the track.
Yeah. When it's you know, it's like when you watch F1, it's kind of like you've got to have the rule book with you almost. You've got to, it's like playing Dungeons and Dragons or something like that. It's like, where's the strategy? You know what I mean? It's like you've got to bring out all the.
F2 is simple.
Yeah. If this person pits on lap 14, then this person's going to pit as well. And it's going to like, and then it all shuffles around. And then whereas F2 is like, they're starting on that tire, they're starting on that tire, go.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
Come together at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I've still got a proper Wasser coming at you, me.
Wasser,
what a man. He's my favourite. Yeah, I've got to go for him.
Yeah.
All right, Josh. Well, look, we're taking up more than enough of your time. So thank you for being so generous with your time.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Where can anyone find you on Instagram or where can people find you?
Just at JDD Hill on Instagram. Use X. Or Twitter, whatever it is.
I thought it was going to be like 2013 FIA.
Yeah, 2013 FIA, Formula 3, half season.
It's a bit too long for the character.
Yeah, no, at JDD Hill on Instagram. It's basically the only thing I use. Nice.
And if you ever find your way into the paddock, then keep an eye out.
Yeah, sure. I can't get you tickets. I'm sorry. I'm not that guy.
Yeah, maybe close your DM.
Yeah, before anyone asks, I'm not that person.
But if you do already have them,
I'm not that influential.
Yeah, because I'm asking first. Before you know. Where can the people check us out, Niren? Ratings, 5 stars,
well,
all that?
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening in audio only on Spotify, feel free to give us a 5-star rating. If you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe. We'll have plenty of clips going out from this, and also we'll obviously be back for the live shows when the summer break is over.
Zandvoort, baby. We've got one more weekend of no racing.
We have indeed.
And then you're back to work.
I do work on other times. Not doing anything.
He got you a good time, a little bit of break. But so what are you doing at the minute? What are you working?
So I do a bit of coaching. I work at Mercedes-Benz World.
Nice.
As a driving specialist there, and do a bit of sort of one-to-one coaching when people contact me. So you can DM me.
Ask him about that.
One-to-one coaching. I'll come to the circuit, just stand there, watch you go around, and tell you where you're going wrong. So
easy.
Yeah.
There you go. Perfect.
Good stuff.
Perfect. I need some driving tips. So very handy.
Yeah, he does.
I wasn't that great in the car. I was okay, but could do better. Right. Thank you, everyone, for watching. We'll see you next week.
Peace and love.
Ciao, adios. We are done. Goodbye.